Welcome to Sonship Podcasts with me, John McDonald. My guest today is Rain Onyx, and you've heard a little bit of Rain Onyx's story from their mom, Tinica, in the last podcast. So today, I want to get their own version of what happened when they came out, how people reacted, what happened with the church, what happened with family, and how is life now? Where is God in it all?
Rain, it's so good to have you. Welcome.
It's so good to be here.
So obviously, this is a podcast about faith and deconstruction and all the issues that come around that. And your background, you've got a faith background, haven't you?
Grew up Christian. I guess I would say I grew up non-denominational, I guess you would say. My family was very much wanted, like believed in the church being a whole, so it didn't have super strict rules according to that or anything, but it was definitely grew up in a very like, you know, your whole world is Jesus. Your whole world, your whole life should be do whatever you can to like, you know, progress the kingdom and that sort of thing. You know, I think it was we weren't strict in any way. Like it wasn't like, oh, you're not allowed to do this, but it was definitely like everything was encouraging. Like it was more guidance towards this is what you should be doing, unless like you have to do this, I guess. But it was, you know, I fully very much believed in everything. So it was, you know, I spent my entire life trying to be the absolute best Christian that I could be for, you know, 18 years of my life, basically.
But so were you kind of involved in church, or were you just attending and your family were? How did that work?
I was very involved I was homeschooled, so I didn't have too many friends or stuff in elementary school and kind of going into middle school and stuff like that. So I ended up going to a youth group to a church. We didn't actually like attend that church on Sundays, but I went to the youth group of it, I think starting when I was like 12 years old, kind of. And that was like my one social thing. So that was like the thing I was excited for every single week. And like, we had a worship thing at like for 2 hours and then a Bible study for 2 hours and then a 2 hour event. So I was there for like, you know, 6-7 hours every Friday. And I spent many years just like attending it like every single time. And then eventually when I got old enough, they had a thing called a student leader, which is essentially you're too young to be like an actual leader, but you basically get to like help out and go to all the meetings and run things here and there and stuff like that. So I did that for a couple of years. And then our youth pastor ended up moving. And we spent probably close to a year without a youth pastor. So it kind of turned on all of the leaders to kind of each take what they could to run the whole thing. But a lot of the like actual adult leaders, you know, had jobs and lives and stuff. So they did what they could, but it was a lot harder for them. So it ended up being like me and two of my friends, basically, who are all in grade 12 and 11. And we ended up essentially running the youth group mostly by ourselves for around a year or so. And that was like planning all of the events, you know, writing up like 10-15 minute sermons to give at like the end of each thing. And like, you know, basically like we just spent like hours every week, like pouring ourselves into creating this youth group, because for so many of us, that was like our space. Like we absolutely loved that youth group like to death. Like it was like, for me, it was like basically top priority, like right after school, because, you know, you got to do school, but it was, it meant like literally everything to me at that time.
Wow. So you were organizing activities, you were doing some preaching and teaching.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you like that aspect of it? Was it enjoyable, or was it just like, this has to be done?
I liked it. I mean, there were definitely parts that were tricky. There were definitely times where I was like, I just want to relax. But I was like, no, there's youth group tomorrow. I have to get all this ready. But in general, I really enjoyed it. Partially because I like organizing things, so that was fun for me. But then partially because it was like you know, I felt like I was doing something for God. And like, that was the most important thing. As I always felt like I'm not doing enough. Like even when I was doing all of that, it still felt like I'm not doing enough. I should be reading my Bible more. I should be praying more, because it's just, you know, I think that's what you're taught all the time, is like, you can never do enough for God. Like there's always something you could be doing more. You should always be striving for, you know, to be as close to Jesus as possible. Yeah. So anytime you do anything for yourself, you felt like, oh, should I be doing something for God right now instead of something for myself? Mm-hmm. So it was, I did enjoy it, but it also made me feel like I was, you know, being the good Christian that I should be.
I know exactly what you mean. But it's interesting, because I often ask people, you know, like, how do you know when you've done enough? Because there's always something you could or should or must or ought to.
Yeah, I would say, like, I don't think there is ever you've done enough, from what I've experienced. No one that I knew, like even the pastors at that church always talked about how I need to be doing more. And it's like their entire job was dedicated to God. And it was just, that's just how you grew up as, is just, you know, you can never do enough. You always need to be doing more. And you should always feel guilty about not doing enough.
I'll come back to the youth group in a moment, but you spoke about playing music, and you're still involved in music, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm currently going to a college for music. So that's really exciting.
So what is it you want to do? You want to perform or produce? Or
I want to produce. That's really my big thing. I love performing, but I know for me that I have a lot of anxiety and a lot of performance issues. So, you know, I would love to do little things like that, but I don't
stage
think I can make
the,
a job.
Stage
out
is not
of
the
it.
Best place to work those
no,
out.
No, definitely not. So yeah, no, producing is really what I'm interested in.
Any particular genres or?
I really enjoy like alternative or like indie pop, that sort of stuff. That's like kind of like just out of the mainstream a little bit.
Sure. Anyone I would have heard of? Who are you into?
Some of my favorites, they're all like indie people, so they're not big or anything, but some of my favorites are Cave Town, who's really really good, and Nico Collins is another one that I really like.
But let's go back to youth group. Now, you were going through a lot of inner turmoil. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, about the turmoil that you were going through?
Yeah, so
at the end of your time with youth,
it was a really tricky time, because it was actually like right around when COVID happened. And right before that happened, a new youth pastor came in. And we were kind of still running a lot of things, because he was just like fresh out of college. And we wanted him to really like see what our youth group was like, because we'd had interns and stuff that had come in and basically kind of like steamrolled and just like did what they thought was best. And our youth group was we were a very calm youth group. So anything that was like super like high intensity or like super like extroverted stuff, it didn't go nearly as well as I think they thought it would. So we really wanted to like give him a chance to like see what stuff like this group enjoyed and like give him a chance to kind of get into it. So he was kind of doing that, and then COVID hit, and then obviously everything got like completely shut down. We didn't really have youth group. We had like Zoom Bible studies every once in a while sort of thing. So I wasn't nearly actively as involved in that at that time. But, you know, in the middle of that is when I started realizing, I think there's something different about me. And it was a very slow process for me, because I consider myself asexual panromantic. So asexual basically just means I experience like little to no sexual attraction. And I had been grappling with that for like years. That was the part of my identity that I felt like,
why is everyone fancying someone and I'm not, kind of thing.
Yeah, like, exactly. And it was, you know, and it just one of those things when like, I feel like I knew it about myself since I was like 16, but you just don't really let yourself like fully believe it, because it's like, well, no, that's a queer thing to be, and I can't be that way. But it was, you know, even a little bit before COVID, I had been realizing like more and more, like, I think this actually might be me. And during that time, I ended up meeting a friend who was also queer and also, you know, had grown up in a very Christian and religious environment. Yeah. And they were amazing with just like, we kind of had each other to like figure ourselves out a little bit. And through that, I ended up finding this person that I ended up liking. And I was like, oh no, I shouldn't be liking this gender. This is not correct. And I went through like many months of being like, well, maybe I don't actually like them. Maybe this is just me being confused or like all of these sorts of things. Cause it is a little bit more tricky for me to figure out if I actually like someone or not, because I think most people look at someone and they're like, wow, that person's hot. You know, I clearly like them. And for me, it's more just like, oh, I want to be cute and romantic with that person. But it's a little bit harder to like distinguish those two things. So I was able to just like deny it for way longer than I probably could have been able to otherwise. So I was going through a lot of that, and I started doing like a lot of research on, you know, what does the Bible say about this, and doing a lot of like self-reflecting and like praying, and, you know, basically just, it was constantly me just being like, I want to pursue this with this person. And it was just constantly praying to God, being like, if this is wrong, stop me. If you don't want me to doing this, then close that door. Like, I don't want to go down a path that is wrong. I want to follow what you want, basically. And just, it was months of that before finally I felt like, well, nothing has stopped me. I feel accepted within this. So I pursued that.
How do you mean accepted?
With this person. I accepted just by God, not by other people, just accepted. Right. I personally felt like
that God, like, is okay with you being you, kind of thing.
So I ended up pursuing that relationship for probably around 3 months before I actually came out to anyone, which was maybe not the exact best decision, but it was a really difficult like time of both of our lives, and I think we definitely needed each other in that moment. So you're
in this relationship for 3 months, and is that helping you to figure out where you're at internally?
It definitely did. It was like, I wasn't really putting a label on it at the start. I was like, I knew I still liked guys, definitely. But I was like, you know, there's a lot of different labels out there that you can kind of put on it. So it was helpful to just like have that person that I could talk to and like figure stuff out with. But yeah, we were in this relationship for like 3 months, and then eventually I was, you know, figured I should probably tell somebody about it. So it was a very slow coming out experience. Like, I told some of my friends and then they were okay with it. So I told a couple more of my friends and then they were okay with it. And then I was the big one, which was telling my parents. And that was like, it was very terrifying.
How did your mom and dad react?
I would say it was definitely a process for them. Like, the initial reaction was very much just like, okay, I still love you. Now I need to sort this out, kind of, you know? I think both of them had already started deconstructing from, you know, Christianity at that time. They had already gone through that process for a couple of months. So they were definitely like already on the track of like getting there. They just had to like speed run that process a little bit because now they had a kid who was gay. But they were both very good with it. It was definitely like a lot of questioning and like them trying to like, just, you know, everyone that grows up this way is going to have some sort of internalized homophobia. Like, I had to work through that. And I think all of my family did as well when I came out to them, because I think it's just, you know, it's always seen as like, oh, well, they're just choosing to be this way because, you know, they don't have proper faith, or, you know, there's always an explanation for it.
Or they've been abused, or they've not had a dad, or they've not had a mum.
Exactly. So I think for them, it was just a lot of like, you know, reevaluating everything that they've been told and have believed their entire lives about that. But, you know, I knew because my parents are extremely accepting now. And ever since I was little, like, they've always said to me, like, you know, like, if you're gay, we still love you. Like, they would say that to me just every once in a while. I don't know if they had like some sort of like sixth sense as to what was coming or what, but like I never had a fear that I was going to be kicked out or I was going to be abused or, you know, so
it's funny speaking with your mom because, you know, she goes through that list, you know, like, well, she's not been abused. She's got both parents and she's been loved and she, help.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing is it's like, you know, for me, it was that same experience for me, like figuring out myself because I was like, well, I'm feeling these ways, but these things have never happened to me. And then that was me realizing like the light bulb of just like, oh, I guess some people are just like this. Mm. Why weren't we taught that, you know? And then, you know, from there, I had to tell the youth group.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So did you tell them all in a group or?
No, I actually, because it was still in the middle of COVID during all this. I had not seen any of my youth group like face to face in months.
Wow.
So I actually ended up like just messaging the youth pastor at that time, which I had not known for that long is one of the things because he was a new youth pastor. So this was like an extra level of nerves put on top of it. But I ended up messaging him and just saying like, hey, can we meet up? So we went to Starbucks and we sat and we talked and, you know, I came out to him, I explained the situation and, you know, it was at the time, at that very moment that it happened, it seemed like it went way better than I thought because he was very understanding, you know, and I even like laid out like all of the research that I had done. And I was like, I'm telling you, I did not just like randomly decide to be gay one day, just like on a whim, like, you know. And he had basically told me at that time, okay, what we're going to do basically is, because that was during like the winter-ish. And I was planning on leaving for school in the summer. So he was like, so what we'll do is you can finish the rest of your year here. And then once you hit, you know, summertime, and that was essentially when all of us that weren't full leaders yet, but we're kind of running it, we're going to become full leaders was like during that summer. So he was like, once we hit that point, you're basically going to be moving pretty soon anyway. So that's when we'll, in his words, that's when we'll transition you out of the youth group was basically what he told me, which obviously was still not right. But for me, who was, you know, expecting much worse than that, I was really happy because essentially I was going to be getting most of the youth group experience that I wanted to get. I would be like cut 2 months short, basically, but that was it. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I was really, really happy about it and I didn't get berated or anything like that. So that was good. And then like, I think it was 2 days later, which one thing is I asked him not to tell anyone because I was like, I'm not out to a lot of people. Like I was out to a couple close friends and my parents and that was it. So I was like, please don't tell anyone. And he was like, I might have to talk to the head pastor about it. I didn't know the head pastor that much. So I wasn't super comfortable with it, but I understood. I'm like, he's really new to the church. I get it. I was like, if you have to talk to the head pastor about it, you can. What they ended up doing was bringing it to a board meeting with many people. And they were like, we didn't say your name. And I'm like, okay, but like, there's still going to be a person like you're going to bring it to a board meeting. You're going to talk about, there's this queer person. This is what's happening. And then they brought it to a board meeting and the board essentially decided that I needed to leave immediately, that I wasn't going to be allowed to have, you know, that 6 months that I was originally told I was going to be able to have. So, you know, a couple days later, he ends up messaging me and essentially telling me this. Well, he phrased it as like, just to clarify a couple things, from our meeting, but then completely changed what he had originally said and basically said, we're going to be transitioning you out within the next couple of months. And then it happened in a week. Wow. So it was very different from what he said, but basically what ended up happening is, you know, the whole board knew that there was a queer person. They didn't say my name, but they knew there was a queer person. And then I left a week later. So it's like, wow, I wonder who the June queer two. Person was. Yeah. I don't think it's too hard to figure that one out. And they were like close friends.
How did the other kids react? Like, I mean, did you get the chance to speak to them, or were you gone and then they said, you know, Rain's gone because they're gay?
I didn't really have a chance to talk to any of them because, like, again, because it was in the like middle of COVID. When it all happened, I just, you know, we had had like a summer where we had kind of had some groups again that I was involved in. And then when like the fall cycle of COVID hit, that was when all of this was happening.
Right.
So I didn't get to see any of the youth kids again. There were a couple other queer people actually in that youth group that, I still kind of like kept talking to, and I let them know what happened, but all of the other kids in that youth group, they probably know now, but at the time they didn't know why I had left, because I wasn't comfortable saying why, because so many people didn't know that I wasn't just going to like, you know, make a public announcement to like on the Facebook page or something like that. But the leaders, because we had a group chat with the leaders, and basically when I was asked to leave, they were saying that I left, like I chose to leave. English. But I went on there and I was like, I have been asked to leave because of a difference in belief. And I like sent this really long message to this group chat that was basically just explaining that I was leaving, explaining because it was a matter of like just belief differences, which even up to that point, like I wasn't in the same denomination that that church was. So there were differences in beliefs, like small ones here and there that came up, and everyone was very respectful about it. Like it wasn't like anything major, so they didn't care, but I guess, you know, this was a big thing. And basically just like sent a huge message saying how much I loved this youth group, how much I was going to miss everyone, how sad I am to be leaving, poured my heart out a little bit. And one person responded to it being like, we'll miss you. And nobody said anything else. And I was just like, cool. So either they never cared about me in the first place, or he lied when he said he wasn't going to tell anyone. And now they don't know how to act around me.
Yep. That was my immediate thing, is like, maybe they're tricky. Or maybe they've been told not to speak to you. It has happened in other places where kids have been told, okay, you need to avoid that person now. You can't speak to them because we've handed them over to the devil.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know the lingo.
Yeah.
Wow. How did that make you feel, Lorraine? I mean, that must have been a very painful time for you.
It was brutal. Because, like, I told you before, I was homeschooled. So, like, I didn't really have many friends. Like, I've had my one best friend my whole life. And like, there's this little group of four of us that I have been close to like for probably 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I didn't have any other friends. You know, I was homeschooled. I didn't have a lot of way of meeting people. So that youth group was my social place. It was the place that I went to make friends. You know, it was all of that. It was again, like what I said, it was the most important part of my life, essentially. So losing that, you know, basically what gave me so much meaning in my life. And on top of it, I looked up to all of the leaders in that youth group, like so much, like they were the people I wanted to embody, like as I got older and stuff. So I've always been a person that like, I've always been a teacher's pet, like ever since elementary school. Like I wanted my teachers to like me, and I was the same way in the youth group. I wanted the leaders to like me. I wanted to be like, you know, the person that they went to when they needed something. And for so long,
first child syndrome.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
I'm the first child in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So, you know, having that and knowing that now all of those leaders that I looked up to, that I wanted to be the person that they liked, that they all saw me as like a disappointment now, was basically how I looked at it. So that was, and at the same time, you know, we're going through COVID, so we like can't really leave the house and like all of this other stuff. So it was a lot at once. And it was very difficult for a long time to, you know, I think the hardest thing for me was just literally like knowing that all those people that I cared about either saw me as a disappointment or like, you know, they've gone off the deep end or like, you know, they can't see me as like a friend anymore. And of course they were like, you can still come to like our young adults group if you want, but it's like, you've broken that. Like there's no being able to like make that distinction now of being like, well, I'm not allowed at the youth group, but I'm allowed to this other thing. It's when someone has, you know, when an organization or a person or anything like that has broken that relationship so badly, it's, you can't just like go somewhere and then like pretend that everything is fine and that you're doing okay.
So you're out the youth group. You've got friends who encourage you and supportive of you, and they're dumped out as well or invited to leave. So what's happening with you and God in all of this? Was anything happening with you and God in all of this?
Definitely. Oh, definitely. Like it was a very slow process for me, but you know, it started with being queer and just realizing, you know, I went through the process of, I can't believe that queer people are bad. So then it was for me going, okay, is God bad, or is the people that are following God bad, you know?
Wow.
So it was that process for me. And, you know, eventually just came to the conclusion that religion has formed this whole, you know, rally against the queer people thing. And then from there going, okay, if the Bible is, you know, not if the Bible is incorrect, but if people are interpreting that part of the Bible incorrectly, what else could be, you know, like, what else might be wrong? And slowly going through that process along with, you know, my mom, who's also going through that at the same time, and just like realizing slowly.
I guess when you started going through that, you realized your mom wasn't actually having a breakdown, then she was going through the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but yeah, just very slowly kind of like taking each little piece and going, is this actually God or is this something else? And then figuring it out and, you know, setting it to one side or the other of what do I keep and what do I need to rethink? And it was just, you know, it's a very slow process because it's like every piece, you essentially feel like you're going crazy, for me at least. Because every time you have to reevaluate, you're like, am I going off the deep end? Am I a horrible person for thinking this way? Because, you know, you've basically been indoctrinated like your whole life to be like, if you doubt, you know, doubters are sinners. So
but this is the thing, isn't it? That most people go through that process on their own because who do they dare speak to about their doubts and their fears and their disbeliefs? And so no one realizes that there's a whole cadre of people out there going through the same process. You know, questioning everything they've been told. And like you, I've gone through a lot of that process to where I am now, and probably still more to go. But every time I came to something new, I was like, oh man, I'm a heretic, and I can't really be a believer in Jesus, and because your heart knows what's real. Internally, there's something in you that knows what's real, but then your head fights against it because of what you've been told your whole life.
That's exactly what it is. Because it is like growing. I think part of what I've come to realize is a lot of Christianity is, you know, being controlled or being manipulated. And it's, you know, that's the whole point of manipulation, is to think that like you manipulate people into thinking that if they step out of what they've been taught, that they're horrible or that something horrible is going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm sure most people don't do it intentionally, but that is how a lot of Christianity works.
Well, the system is exactly like that, isn't it? It's designed to herd the sheep, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot, yeah, it's just crazy because I think you're right. People are just passing on what they've had passed on to them without critically thinking about it. And I think that's what's missing. Is critical thinking is missing from a lot of Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Because we're told that, well, if we don't understand something, well, that's just God's plan and you're not supposed to understand it.
Yeah.
So it takes away, like, you know, all of that. If you are like, well, I don't think that, I think maybe this, well, then it's like, well, no, you have to trust what the Bible says. But it's not, you have to trust what the Bible says. It's, you have to trust what we believe the Bible says, but they don't say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's a crazy time. You're going through the whole sexuality thing. You're losing friends and peers and the people you respected. You're, if you want to, I don't know, a crisis of faith, deconstruction, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how were you not falling apart, or where are you falling apart?
I was totally falling apart. Like, there's no questioning that at all. Like, I was very, you know, I don't want to use the word depressed because I wasn't like clinically depressed or anything, but it was a very dark period of my life. Because I think, and even in the friend group that I did have, so much of us were going through our own stuff at that time that it was really hard to, you know, get together. And that was also on me because I wasn't really getting together with them because I was not doing okay. So I wasn't putting the effort into getting together, but then like all four of us were going through that same thing. So no one was really talking to each other because we were all just kind of trying to survive on our own, because all four of us essentially went through that same experience. Like, me and my best friend were personally kicked out, but then the other two were kind of like, well, we're not going to stay in this when clearly they're removing the people that we care the most about. So then they ended up just leaving on their own. So all of us lost our main kind of support and, you know, social place.
Yeah, and there's a real essentially grief thing that goes on, isn't there?
Sorry?
There's a real grieving process in that.
Oh, 100%.
You know, especially when you've invested so much of your life in it. You know, from 12 years old to 18 years old. You know,
that's the hardest part, is just realizing, like, you know, and I've gotten to the point now where I can look back on it and mostly just enjoy the memories that I have of it. Mm. But, you know, at the time you're sitting there and you're thinking, how much of my life did I waste on this? You know, how many hours did I spend, you know, caring about something that never cared about me? Yeah. So it's just, it's 100% a grieving process. And then, of course, at the same time, I'm going through another crisis in my gender identity, which is a whole other thing that I went through like 6 months later, essentially. Oh. So it was then figuring all of that out on top of everything I was going through in that period of time, which is, you know, another piece of that puzzle that you have to sit at and go, am I crazy? Am I a lunatic? Am I, you know, mentally ill? So,
yeah. So, I mean, how did you process all of that? Because that's a lot to process for anyone. But when you're that young, I mean, you're 18 years old, you know, and you're processing the loss of friendship, the loss of your relationships, you're kind of losing a bit of the sense of yourself because you're suddenly like, I'm not who I thought I was, you know, and then you're trying to process the pain. And I'm guessing there's some anger and like, sense of injustice even about what's happening to you. You know, how do you process all of that, Rain?
I wish I could give you like a straightforward answer, but I think it is literally just taking it one day at a time and trying every once in a while just to be like, I want to do something today that is going to make me happy. And just finding, even if you're happy for like 3 seconds that day, that's something, you know? And at the same time, having the small supports that I did, like me and the person I was dating continued dating for, I think, another 3 months. We eventually ended up splitting up, but it was on really good terms. And like, I still treasure that time with them very much because they were a huge part of keeping me afloat in all of that. And yeah, just like, and then stuff like, you know, this podcast and other like online resources that make you realize like maybe I'm not as crazy as some people, as I was taught to believe I am, you know, finding other people that are going through the same thing and just knowing that you're not completely alone in it. And then, you know, having my mom who was also going through a lot of the same experiences. And I think a lot of people were, but my mom was the most vocal about it. So, you know, and hearing all of these things surprise. That she was learning. Yeah, I know, right? But just being able to like, you know, hear from her the things that she's been hearing about online and like have someone to be able to talk through it a little bit was, you know, really good. And it was really interesting because, you know, sometimes one of us would bring up a puzzle piece that the other person hasn't thought about. And then the other person will go, well, no, that's crazy. And then, you know, we'd sit on it for a couple days and then we'd be like, maybe that wasn't so crazy. Maybe that was just me not having deconstructed that part yet, you know?
Wow. Wow. Well, that's great having someone to bounce that off of and just like, you know, am I crazy? Am I a heretic? Am I going off the deep end?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. So where do you think you got to with you and God and all of that?
I think I just discovered that, you know, God is way better than most people say. And they say that God is great, but then they don't teach that God is all that great, I think. So it's just kind of like, I guess the way that I look at things now, if I'm deciding, like my moral compass has completely shifted to essentially looking at something and going, is this hurting someone or is this helping someone or is it doing neither? Mm. And if it's hurting someone, well, then it's not a good thing and you shouldn't do it. If it's helping someone or loving on someone, well, then it's a good thing. And if it's not hurting anyone, it's just kind of a neutral thing, then it's a neutral thing. And I know that like that perception is going to change a little bit depending on the person, sure. Obviously. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe there isn't this like standard moral compass that everyone should follow. But, and then just using that and then going, well, whatever is not, you know, whatever is hurting someone, if God is like, you know, the most loving creature out there, well, then he would never do that. So I'm going to not believe in this part of this. I'm going to restructure how I've believed about this and kind of just, you know, moving that from one way to the other. And I think, you know, also kind of in some way, taking off like the blame or like the responsibility of God in a lot of things, because I think like, even if you think about like, you know, healing the sick or something, so many people talk about like, oh, God's like saved me from death and it was a miracle. But then it's like, okay, but God didn't save this person from death. So did he hate that person? You know? So I think I've kind of taken off that responsibility from God and just going, you know, life happens how it happens.
And there are things we can't explain.
Exactly. So
that's that's the problem, isn't it? There has to be an answer for everything. And it's like, it's almost like we can't just say, do you know what? I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish I had an answer, but I don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is, you know, but we just, I mean, I'm much more in that place now, but there was a time when I was like, I just had to have an answer or make one up.
Yeah. You know, no, I think that's one of the really big things. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's not a bad place to come to. So you're going through all this, and then as you're coming through that, you discovered that you're having a gender identity crisis. How do you mean? What do you mean by that? A lot of people don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, sorry. Basically, what happened is the person I was dating at the time came out to me as non-binary. And I think for me, a lot of what happened is I would go, this is crazy, until I saw someone that I really care about, you know, do that thing. And then I'd be like, now I have to rethink this. So, you know, them coming out as non-binary kind of was like, okay, well, I guess that has to be okay then, you know? And that was another little piece of the puzzle that I had to figure out. But once I figured out, like,
Those listening, what's non-binary for those listening?
Non-binary essentially means that your internal, like, way you view yourself is not as a girl and not as a boy. It's somewhere in between or somewhere completely away from that. But it's just, it essentially means any sort of gender identity that isn't strictly a boy or, like, strictly a girl.
Again, there'll be people listening who won't guess that.
Of course. Sorry, I'm so...
That's all right.
Like, you know, enraptured in queer culture now that don't think about it quite as much.
So you're wrestling with that then. Am I not a boy or a girl, or am I something, or how are you, what's the process going on inside you with that?
It was definitely like opening the door to realizing that, okay, maybe this is a part of me. And it took a very long time for me to figure it out, because I went through, you know, I'm the kind of person, when I'm trying to figure something out, I like look everything up. So I'm like looking up like, okay, what are all of these different options that I have in front of me? And then going, does this option feel like right? No, not really. Does this option feel right? No, not really. And, you know, kind of going through all of them. And it took a long time and it took a lot of experimenting. Like for me, like when nobody was home, I would like, so I had long hair at the time. So like one of the tricks you can do is like put it in a ponytail and then like flip it forward and then put a hat on. So like you look like you have short hair basically. And like trying all these weird different sorts of expressing gender and seeing like what felt like it fit me and what felt like it didn't, you know, and like kind of experimenting through that. And it was, I would say, like several month long process. And also like talking to my partner at the time and being like, can you try using, like, can you try calling me he, or can you try calling me they, to see how I felt about it? And I think some people just like, no, like this is exactly how I feel. And I'm just not that person. I also just like overthink things way too much. So even if I had a moment where I was like, this feels right, I was like, maybe it doesn't though. So, you know, it was a long process of going through it.
I guess it's how you feel long term rather than just in a moment in time then, is it?
Yeah. So what I ended up kind of figuring out about myself is that I am gender fluid, which essentially means that my gender identity can change very suddenly or gradually over time. And, you know, it's been a pro, even after I came out, I was still discovering more about, you know, my gender identity. And, you know, I've settled down to the point where I feel like I would describe myself as essentially like a trans masculine person. So transgender towards the masculine side. I wouldn't say that I'm like 100% a trans man. So I don't like fully identify as a man, but like 95% of the time, the way I feels more like a boy leaning towards that side than, you know, in the middle, or a girl or something like that.
Wow. So for those listening, please give this some thought. And if you want to go and look things up and find out more, because this is happening to a lot of people because they've never had the freedom to explore this before, you know, so don't just dismiss it as being a crazy person on the podcast, but really, you know, speak to people, read things, and you'll discover that this has been around a long, long time, but it's just been repressed for so many decades or more, you know, centuries even. So I just wanted to put that in there for people listening to catch that.
And the thing about myself, I would say too, is I think you hear a lot of people like on media and stuff, they say like, from the moment I was 3 years old, I knew that I was a boy, you know? And I think that is a completely valid way to be. And for me, it was not that. Not because I haven't felt this way my whole life, but because I think it was just such like a thing that was either not talked about or only talked about negatively, that it was like I did not even let myself for a second consider that possibility. So it took me being like, maybe this is okay to, you know, explore that. And then once I figured out, I like looked back on my life and I was like, that makes so much sense why I was feeling all of these things from being, you know, 7 years old. All of these things started like realizing like, that's why I felt that way, you know? So it doesn't necessarily have to be like oh, you've known your whole life. And for me, that was a really hard thing for me, because the only kind of stories I had heard from people were people knowing since they were a kid. So it was like, well, I can't be that way because I haven't always known this. But, you know, it was taking, and, you know, I struggled with that for years. Like, still sometimes I feel like, what if I'm just faking it? But it's like, I have to think, I've been living my life this way for, like, you know, I've had top surgery, I'm on testosterone, like, I've been living this way for like over a year, and I've never once regretted it or had any like, oh, I feel like this is wrong, like I shouldn't have done this or anything. So it's, you know, letting yourself actually consider it and not just like immediately push any thoughts away is, you know, allowed me to live a life that, like, I am so much happier now that I've actually been able to, you know, take this path that I never would have, like, I didn't even know that path was there before. So it's been like such a great experience. And coming out was another, like, a second time, basically. It wasn't as hard as the first time, because, you know, most of the people I knew at that point already came to terms with me being queer. So it was just like, here's another way that I'm queer, you know? So it wasn't nearly as difficult, but it was like, you know, it opened up. I think that's one of the things that actually, like, really helped me get out of kind of that, you know, depressive episode, was like allowing myself to fully and truly actually be who I am, like, one final time, basically, and having the people around me accept that and, like, you know, be able to call me by my preferred name and by my pronouns and stuff like that was, like, incredibly euphoric.
So how did you come to the decision to for a name change, and how did you, I mean, did you just pick that name out of the air, or was that a deliberate
decision? It was definitely deliberate. A lot of it is, like, you know, I watched a lot of stuff online and read a lot of things online about, you know, kind of the typical steps that trans people take. And not everyone does. I know a lot of trans people that have kept their name at birth, especially if it's more gender neutral and stuff. But, like, for me, I realized the name I was given at birth was a very feminine name. And I just felt, you know, uncomfortable being called something that was extremely feminine. If someone reads that name, they're going to assume that it's a girl that they're talking to. So I just, like, looked through a list of, you know, names and picked out a lot of the ones I like. And actually, like, I believe the name I ended up choosing came from a point when it was like me and my mom just randomly would, like, sit down and come up with names for, like, my future kids, which I'll never have kids, honestly, but we just really liked creating names. So I think Rain was actually, like, on that list of names that we had just created that we really liked. So I ended up choosing that one because I don't know. It's like, you look at a bunch of names and you know, you say them to yourself so you can feel like, oh, do I feel like this one suits me and whatever, or not at that time. And, like, the reason I chose Rain is because I was like, rain is a good thing. It, you know, it nourishes the land, but most people see it as, like, a sad thing. Like, you know, that's when people sit in the parking lot and cry in the rain. So I kind of saw rain as, like, a bittersweet sort of experience. And that's very much how I felt at that time, was extremely bittersweet, because it was like, all of this really terrible things are happening to me, but I'm learning who I am and being able to, like, experience this amazing side of life that I never knew was there before. So that was, like, the reasoning behind it at the time.
So how did people react to that? They've had to adjust to the fact that you've come out as gay. Now they're adjusting to the fact that you might be trans, and now they're adjusting to the fact that you're changing your name. How did that, the people that know you, I mean, or people that don't know you that well, but are acquainted with you, maybe?
Yeah, some of them were definitely like, again, another thing. Are you kidding me? But, like, not actually in a rude way. It definitely took some time for some people. It was easier for some people than others. And, like, you know, I've talked to a lot of, you know, friends of trans people and parents of trans people and stuff. And there's always a process that parents have to go through, because in some ways they're some people like to say like, oh, they're losing a kid and gaining a new one, which is, it's not true because you're the same person, but you're losing an aspect of someone that you thought you knew and having to learn this new aspect of them. So it is a process. And especially, I think it was really difficult on my mom, me changing my name, because she really liked that name when she gave it to me and stuff. And I kept telling her, it's a beautiful name. It's not me. It doesn't feel like me. So I think that was, you know, a process for her and for friends and everything. It's always takes time because you have to change like how you view that person. Because it's not as simple as like, oh, I need to like, okay, I'll just say he instead of she. It's your, because the way our society is built, it is built to treat women differently than we treat men. And even if you're like the most blanket statement, like try to see everyone the same, it's the way our society is. You can treat them with the same respect and everything, but you're still going to treat them slightly differently. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that they do it. So, you know, you can change the pronouns, but still treat me like a woman. And that's still going to make me feel uncomfortable because I can tell that still you see me as a woman, which is just a super uncomfortable experience for anyone who's trans. So it takes, and it takes time to like change your perception of someone to, you know, whatever their new identity is. And I don't expect it to be like, oh, I told you, you immediately see me as a guy now. Like, it's going to take some time for that whole process to happen. Like, you know, I've been out for as trans for like almost 2 years now to like my family, a little bit longer to some people, a little bit less than other people. And, you know, some people are still on that process of having to like change how you see people, because especially people that have known me for basically my whole life, it, you know, it takes time, and that's totally okay.
So your mom's okay with everything. Your dad's okay with everything. What about the wider family, cousins, aunts, uncles? How's it going with that?
So my whole entire extended family on both sides are all very Christian. So it was, you know, I feel like everyone has like, oh, that one gay cousin or something like that, you know? I never had that, partially because all of my cousins are quite a bit younger than me. And also just because, you know, I've grown up in a super, you know, Christian extended family. So for me, I didn't like personally come out to every single person, but I came out personally to both sets of my grandparents. And, you know, my one set was completely lovely about it. Like they're definitely, you know, had to like, you know, they were like, we don't totally get it, but like, that's okay. And like, they're super great. They've been, you know, working on my new name and, you know, my pronouns and all that stuff. And, you know, they get it wrong a lot because they're old and whatever, but like, I don't care. Like the fact that they have accepted me and
do you mean they're old? How old are they?
Oh no, I don't really know.
I'm only teasing you.
You know, it's the kind of old where they call me by like my brother's name accidentally often. That's
all right. Oh, no, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. I might be in my 60s, but I'm not at that stage. I'm just teasing you.
No, yeah, you know, you don't think about it when you're a kid. I don't need to know how old my grandparents are.
I know.
But yeah, they were absolutely amazing about it. And then my other set of grandparents, my grandma on that side is same way, super lovely about it. Like, again, like same kind of thing, anyone, they don't really get it, but they care about me enough that they're willing to like put their own kind of like the way they've been raised aside so that they can still have that relationship with me. Which is really sweet. And I honestly feel so lucky to have like three quarters is pretty good. Wow. But the one remaining, my grandpa on the one side has basically, I personally came out to him when I came out as just gay. I hadn't come out at trans or anything at that point. And at that point, you know, we had already been kind of estranged because a lot of stuff had gone on between him and my mom when she was going through a little bit of change in beliefs at that point. So we didn't really have a super close relationship at that point, but I still decided to come out to him personally. And, you know, I literally got about as far as I have something I need to tell you. I like guys and girls and people in between. And that's as far as I got. I didn't get any further than that, because as soon as I said that, it was basically just, well, this Bible verse says that's wrong, and this Bible verse says that is wrong, and if you don't repent of this, then you're going to hell. And it just, you know, I didn't really get another word in at that point. So I stood there for about 3 minutes and let it happen, and my mom was there. And you know, after about a couple minutes of that, she was like, okay, we're going to leave. So, you know, we went to the door. I put my shoes on. I gave him a hug. I said, I love you very much. And I left. And I didn't talk to him for probably around a year. And in that time, I came out as trans. I didn't come out to him personally. He knew about it because we were like still friends on Facebook, and I changed my name on Facebook. And I'm sure, you know, word gets around. We lived in a small town. So I'm sure he found out. And, you know, I took that time away. We weren't, our family, like none of my family was close to him anyway, so it didn't really matter. And then, you know, I recently, like 6 months ago or so, I moved to go to college. So before I moved, I was like, I'm going to give him one more chance before I move. So I messaged him and I said, hi, I'm moving soon. If you want to meet up sometime before I moved, I would love to see you before that. And he was like, I don't know who Rain is. If you're going to talk to me, you have to talk to me as my old name, essentially. And, you know, basically just completely blew me off, and has basically, from what I got from that conversation, if I want to have a sort of relationship with him, I will have to be a straight cis girl in order to, you know, have any sort of relationship with him. So I have not talked to him since then, and I honestly don't plan on it.
It's sad how religion does that, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that when you get so caught up in these beliefs that they come before your family or the people that you love or who love you, it's incredibly sad.
It is. It's very sad. And it's difficult because it's like, I know that he thinks he's doing the right thing, because the way he was raised was basically, if someone steps out of line, well, then you don't have a relationship with them, because if they lose their relationship with everyone, well, then they'll have to, you know, come back into line. So essentially, he believes that if everyone just abandoned me, well, then I would have to, you know, be the good Christian person again.
And so you're up to date, you're at music college, you've had some surgery. Is there still faith there somewhere with you and God, or what's happened with that?
I would say, I'm not sure how to put this. I would say that I kind of at some point hit a point where I said, I want to kind of, I guess you could say the pendulum swung. And right now I'm kind of taking a little bit of a break, I guess you could say. And I really want to just figure out what I believe about the world. And I haven't said I don't believe in God, but I haven't really been saying like, oh, I'm like following God, or I'm, you know, I'm kind of at a point right now where I would say it's a big question mark. I think deep down I do know that God exists, but I think I have to give myself all of the options to really, like, I guess, you know, when you've been told what is right and what is wrong your whole life, I'm giving myself the space to be able to kind of make that decision for myself. So I'm taking a little bit of time just to, like, step away from it for a little bit and just see how I view the world without that filter on. I think if and probably when I do kind of delve back into that, it won't be the same thing that, you know, I left.
When you've been told your whole life this is what it's like, and you start to see that maybe it's not, well, you have to find out for yourself, what is it really like?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the journey I'm still on, you know. So for me, I've reconciled the fact that God is a loving father. That's who he is, like the perfect father.
Yes. You know?
But that's been a process, you know, of, and I'm, like I say, I'm in my 60s now, and I'm still delving into that.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I delve into that, the more I'm stripping away all of the things that I was taught that God is like or Christianity is supposed to be like. And I'm having to then feel, so what is it then? You know, if there's no hell, then is there an afterlife? And if so, what is it? And I don't have answers to that or conclusions to that.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's the really, honestly, one of the most beautiful things that I've experienced with deconstructing is that you don't have to have answers for that. And it's okay that you don't have answers for that. Because I feel like when you're a Christian, you're supposed to have answers for anything just in case someone comes up and asks you about it, because you need to like know everything so that you can like get people to follow God. So if someone comes up to you and asks you a question that you don't have an answer for, it's like, I've failed because I can't answer this person's question and get them to go to church. So it's just like, you know, being able to not know is like one of the most relieving experiences that I've had. And like right now, that's where I'm at. I'm able to say, I don't really know what I believe right now. And if I had said that, you know, 4 years ago, it would have been like, what do you mean? You have to believe that God is real. Like, you can't think all of this. So it's like, I think it's just like having that like relief of just being able to be like, I don't need to know right now. Well, and I've needed to know my whole life. So it's just a very nice break.
Cool. That's a brilliant place to stop, Rain. I've really enjoyed this chat.
Yeah, me too.
Loved it so much. I've loved your honesty and your openness. It's so wonderful to hear the journey you've been on. And I love the fact that you feel confident enough in this loving being that we call God to say, you know what, you're okay if I hit pause for a while, or they're okay, or she's okay, or it's okay. I don't know. I'm not always comfortable calling God he, you know.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way.
And I never know what to call, you know, like they. They is probably the closest, you know.
I think she, so.
Yes, she. If everyone's in their image, then God must be feminine and masculine.
I think God uses all pronouns.
Awesome. Rain, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure having you.
It's been awesome being here.
Cool. Bye-bye.
Bye.